Thank you very much for your presence. We are glad to receive you here in the Parliament. We have with us today three parties, I would say the three major parties, from the CDSPP, which is one of the coalition members, José Ribeiro Castro, Vice Chair of this Commission, from the PSD, which is the major party of the government, António Rodrigues, and from the Socialist Party, which is the main opposition party, Jacinto Serrão. I myself, I'm also a member of the Socialist Party. I'm the vice chair of this committee, and I'm replacing today the chairman. Before we start, I would pass the floor to my colleague, José Ribeiro Castro, because we are going to use this occasion to express our where we are with the events now in Croatia and Bosnia and Serbia. So I will ask José Ribeiro Castro, and I will ask you for 30 seconds of your patience while we make this this vote. Thank you.
Although it's only our affairs, I express myself in English for you to follow, to be easy to follow. We are very worried and concerned by the situation that affects, because of the floods in Bosnia-Herzegovina, in Serbia and Croatia. And so once the parliament is in recess due to European elections, I think we should take advantage of our meeting to decide to express our solidarity to the peoples of those countries, and to say how sorry we are for the victims that happened there, and to appeal to our citizens to express their solidarity in response to the appeal of the authorities of those countries, Serbia, Bosnia, and Croatia, which are the countries affected by the floods. Thank you.
Thank you so much. If there is no nothing against this, so this vote is approved. Mr. Secretary of State, now we'll start with the meeting with you. I'm sorry for this short preliminary initiative. Mr. Secretary of State, thank you very much for your presence. As you know, Portugal is usually very favorable to the accession of new countries to the European Union, so we hope that Montenegro can get it as soon as possible. It's a country of the south of Europe, also a Mediterranean country, so it will be a close partner of Portugal inside the European Union, and of course we support your accession. I will pass you the floor, and you will make your intervention, and then my colleagues from the different parties will also say whatever. So please, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. It's really a pleasure to be here and to be able to speak with the Parliament at the end of my visit. I have had a great chance to meet with lots of line ministries in the last 2 days. First starting with the foreign ministry and then, of course, having the contacts in the justice, in the internal affairs ministry, justice ministry, and also the structural funds ministry and regional development. I would say that this is the first visit of between our two countries which is dedicated to the European affairs. But I have to say that this year we have had a good improvement in our relations. First, in January, we had the bilateral consultations on NATO, which was followed by the meetings of the two delegations in April on the contractual consolidation of our relations, meaning that we are now working on improving the inherited legal acts, contracts that existed before between Yugoslavia during the old times and Portugal, and trying to see what will stay valid for the next period and what not. And especially this visit, which we actually use really to talk a lot about the contacts between the two countries and how Portugal, as now long-standing member states of the European Union, can assist us on our way to the European Union. I would say that the we know, we are aware that we have to learn from the member states, because that's the best way how to progress. We don't want to repeat some of the mistakes, and that's, I think that's why communication between the countries is key. It's really necessary in order to understand better the huge amount of the acquis. You know, now we are dealing with 49,000 legal acts of the European Union. You are the member of the EU for some 30 years, and maybe you forgot how much work there is in order to, because you don't have to integrate or transpose all of the acquis, like we have several years to do it, which means that we have to work on 160,000 pages of documents that need to be actually either implemented directly in our legal system, or we have to change the laws. There are even certain directives that call for 80 laws to be changed, like the directive on services. And that means that really the government needs to have a clear plan what to do, and also the parliament needs to pass a huge number of new laws. This is all a part of the story. Obviously, there is a lots of restructuring. There is a lots of adaptation of the system, of the institutions. We have to work in order to introduce some new mechanisms and methods. Just to make an example, because we are getting closer to the EU, we become much more as a desired destination for asylum seekers. So we had to set up an asylum center, and also to improve the border security. And this shows you maybe very well how the countries actually change in their way in integrating into the EU. You know how much it was important for Portugal to join the EU, to stabilize the country and to improve the economic situation and the possibilities. So we see this as a key ingredient of our future, joining both NATO and the EU. I will say just a few words on NATO, because although I'm not directly involved in NATO integration, but to show you how important this is for us. So we are aiming, and we discussed this in January, as I told you, the support of Portugal for our joining of the alliance and the invitation that we expect to receive in Wales in September. We have high hopes that Montenegro could be invited to the membership, because we really feel that this is a key issue when it comes to the stability and security of Montenegro and the Western Balkans. You know that the Western Balkans is an area which has passed through a number of unstable circumstances in the last two decades. So for us, joining NATO would mean that the first of all, our sovereignty will be guaranteed by the alliance, but also that the country would be even more attractive for foreign direct investment, tourism, and the economy itself will benefit. On top of that, we are the only remaining bit in the NATO's southern flank of the Mediterranean, meaning that by Montenegro joining, the NATO borders will be fully along the coastline of the northern Mediterranean. We also believe that if we get the invitation, we might be joining NATO by 2016 after the ratification process. And that would also strengthen our hopes of joining the European Union. Now, of course, because the process is huge and European integration touches, now we have to negotiate 35 chapters. I believe that when you negotiated, it was around 10 chapters, not more. So you see how it has grown. And how many deep-reaching reforms the country needs to undergo. The heart of the process now is the rule of law. This is the main issue. The political criteria together with the justice, home affairs. And basically, there is a lots of reform going on, from the constant reform of the legislation, of the election legislation, human rights, democratization, judiciary reform, some of the things that you already are passing through in Portugal touches also us. And we are trying really to adjust the system in order to be ready for the membership even before we join in many areas. So for example, with the asylum system, in 2 years we'll have a fully operational structure to deal with the issues of the illegal migration in the Balkans. As it stands now, we have been 2 years negotiating. We managed to open 7 chapters and to close 2. So we have 9 chapters in total. In June, we hope to open 3 more chapters. One of them is also common foreign and security policy one, very important chapter. You may know that Montenegro aligned fully with the all the European statements when it comes to Ukraine. We are the country which implemented all the restrictive measures, unlike Macedonia, Serbia, or Turkey, which have not done that. So we are fully committed to the shared responsibility with the European Union, with the 28. And of course, mentioning, because you started the meeting of the committee with the floods, obviously we feel that also this chapter is very important, because getting more involved in the civil protection will help us also to, and we plan by the end of the year to join the civil protection mechanism of the European Union, which will, of course, we hope it will not be needed, but even in the times of the crisis, it's very good to be in kind of a system where you can get the assistance from the EU itself. We plan to continue along. Our hope is that by 2018 we'll be able to finalize the accession talks. That would mean that we will be negotiating for 6 years. Croatia negotiated something like that, almost the same amount of years, but of course they had the different problems with the Hague Tribunal and the bilateral issues with Slovenia, which prolonged the integration process, so that we can sign the accession treaty by the end of 2018, and then by 2020, after the ratification, Montenegro should be able to hopefully join the EU. This is done having in mind the next financial perspective starting in 2021, so we hope that this would be a good timing to join the European Union. Of course, we are a small country, so we will not influence very much the big union. It's like 600,000 people joining a union of 512 million, I think, now in the European Union. So you see the parameters. But for us, it means that after Slovenia and Croatia, another Western Balkan countries is on its firm way to join the European Union. And we see this also as a kind of natural process where, unfortunately, the whole of ex-Yugoslav space cannot join together, but at least one by one, the ex-republics can go along the path of stabilization and integration. This is very important, and especially having in mind the protracted and open issues in some of the countries of the Western Balkans. You know how the situation in Bosnia is, understand the situation in Macedonia, Kosovo-Serbia relations. So the job is not finished in the Balkans, and we believe that this is the best way to pursue the future of these countries, joining EU and NATO as a kind of stabilizing factor. We'll also have, for knowledge on Sunday, not the European elections, but we'll have local elections in 2/3 of our municipalities. This will be a very important vote because it's the capital city and most of the population lives in the municipalities that will have the elections. But we have a stable system of political balance where basically you have most of the parties are left-oriented or center-left, and you never had in the last 2.5 decades a real distinction between the right and the left, mainly due to the fact that the political spectrum and the political life in the country is mostly divided towards the pro-Montenegrin and pro-Serbian parties. We have 30% of Serbian ethnic minority, and of course there is a strong feeling of those Serbian population to vote for pro-Serbian parties. So this has prevented the kind of normal distinction between the center, left, and right, and created a kind of a very interesting situation when you have the Socialist Party with the Social Democrats ruling for the last almost 15 years. So this is a kind of a very specific issue in the country. We'll see how it will go after the local elections, whether the government will stay stable. But basically, one of the characteristics of the Montenegrin political system, unlike in the rest of the Balkans, has been stability. So this is something that we cherish a lot. So I would stop here, and of course it would be maybe better to answer some of your questions because the area is huge, and of course you want to ask not only on Montenegro but the rest of the region, I would be glad to answer it. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I will give the floor to Antonio Rodriguez from the PSD.
Secretary of State, thank you for your visit. It's always an honor to receive future members of the European Union in our parliament. So as you're saying, it's the first time that I believe that somebody, an official visit from Montenegro to Portugal and specifically to the parliament. So it's quite important and interesting to have your visit here. And it's quite important to have this discussion because Montenegro, as you said, is not a very big country, but of course it's an important country in the perspective that all the countries count in Europe, and we will believe and we will be looking forward that you can meet us soon, maybe in 2020 in Europe. It will be a very nice perspective for us. I believe there are two angles to see the issues that I wanted to address you. First of all, on the political side, as each country at the Balkans are important for the stability for the region. And of course, mainly because of the Mediterranean, as we know that the Mediterranean is this very sensitive place in the south of Europe and for Europe at full. So in this case, I would like to hear about what are your worries about the Mediterranean? What are the efforts that you are doing? You said that the asylum is one of the matters that regard the asylum are one of the main issues that you want to address quickly, because it can be and should be a problem that all of us should look forward to resolve the problems that we are having in Europe. And of course, Montenegro has a role, a very important role there. Secondly, there was one thing I think, at least I missed, that is the economical aspects of accession of Montenegro to Europe. Mainly, are you looking forward to meet also the single currency? Are you thinking of that? Are you thinking that Europe, besides the economical problems and the financial problems that have occurred in Europe for the past 5 years, do you believe that you will not suffer with that and that you can be a partner in that field also? Because even though if Europe nowadays is much more a political project, and that I believe that you can have a very important role there, the economical problem cannot be dissociated of what will be Europe in the future. So what do you think that could happen here with your integration, and what can be the steps that you have to go also towards this, because in the next 5 years you have a very big struggle to do, as you said. There are many rules that have to be adopted. There are many things that have to be changed. We did it, either before we got in and after we became members of the European Union. But of course, for those that come now, and the European Union had developed a lot for the past years, it's a very big task. And well, at last, I would like to salute your visit, and I would like to support your integration in Europe as soon as possible.
José Ribeiro Castro from the CESPP.
Okay, thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure to meet with you and to receive a fresh insight from the situation in Montenegro and its accession process to the EU. As for my part, we fully support your claim. We fully support the accession prospects of every Balkan state. We envisage it as a major step for the stabilization of that region and for the prosperity of their peoples. So in the long run, we envisage all the Balkan region to be integrated in the EU. And that, of course, it also includes the Montenegro aspirations. So wish you every success, and you can count on our help and what may be of use to help to overcome the obstacles in the way. So what I'd like to learn from you, what specific files in those 30 something different areas of discussions, what do you think will be the most difficult ones on your side and on the EU side? So if you have comments or remarks to make in regarding the EU possible towards attitude in some files. I'd like to learn from you what are they. Secondly, you are also neighbor to Albania and to Kosovo. And I'd like to listen from you how do you see the situation now in those countries and what do you see about their future and specifically about the Kosovo, how do you feel it will evolve in the future? Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Allow me to add one question. You are visiting us when we have elections. We know that over Europe, many countries in Europe are facing with some kind of against European movements. Some of these movements are very strong. We just heard that, for instance, in the UK, the movement, new movement against Europe is probably one of the winners of the elections. We have also some other phenomenon in other countries. My question is, how do your people face the accession to the European Union? Do you have opinion polls? Do you have any kind of studies on this or research on this? How do people face? Because even countries like Portugal, where usually the people is quite in favor of the European Union, the percentage is going down, is not increasing, but it's going down. How is it the situation in Montenegro? Is it stable? The view of the people on Europe, is it moving? How is it the current situation? Thank you. You have the floor.
Thank you so much for the questions and the nice words that you transmitted. And I'm really honored to be here in the parliament to be able to be, as you said, maybe the first from Montenegrin government to visit and to speak to you about the integration of the country and the future prospects. On the first issue on the Mediterranean security and how we see is it in a wider framework is obviously that you know the region of the Western Balkans has evolved specifically in the last two decades. Obviously, you have to take into account the 90s when the civil wars were raging across the ex-Yugoslav republics and lots of impact of the sanctions, the UN sanctions and the embargo, which actually produced a kind of a lawless state, which also benefited very much the smugglers and also lots of illegal trade and illegal border crossings and so on. In a way, things started to change, obviously, from 2000 on. But now, faced with the crisis in the southern Mediterranean, and specifically with the developments in Syria, we have been for the first time faced with the influx of illegal migrants. Most of them don't want to stay in the country. They want to move through Croatia and back, not even to stay in Croatia, but they move towards Western Europe. And obviously there is a kind of need to set up a system which would efficiently deal with this. I think that the European Commission has learned a lesson with the Eastern enlargement, and when most of the Eastern countries like the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Poland joined, they did not have good asylum systems, and then they were faced with the huge number, dozens of thousands of people who were coming and crossing the borders. And so from the learned lessons, actually, now the candidates are asked to prepare much earlier than before. We also are a member of the Union for the Mediterranean, and we participate in all of the, let's say, fora dealing with this. But, you know, the Union for the Mediterranean has not proved to be a very effective kind of organization. We also try to influence and to work through the some kind of association of smaller states, where Cyprus and Montenegro are the biggest ones, because among the 10 small states in Europe, we We are the biggest ones. The rest is either like Luxembourg or Iceland, they are 300 and less. So we also we enlarged our participation in the EU peace missions. We have been for the last 6 years in Atalanta and Somali waters. We sent troops to Mali, and now to getting ready to send troops to the Central African Republic. So we want to give our, and also we have been present in Afghanistan for the last 5 years. So it's, in a way, it's the biggest contribution of Montenegro with lots of rotations and our full commitment to actually not just being thinking about the peace in the Balkans, but also in the wider region. So obviously, the more we are going to move towards the membership, there will be even more illegal migrations trying to cross through the country. So we need to actually strengthen, and that's why we are already now preparing a Schengen Action Plan. Although you understand that once the country joins, that only then it can start getting ready for Schengen. You do not automatically become a Schengen partner. But so we also decided to do it very early, to start immediately, to get ready. So once we become a member of the EU, we have the system almost ready to easily fulfill. This was also a lesson learned after Bulgaria and Romania, obviously. Now with Croatia, we'll have to see how fast they are going to move towards Schengen. On the other issue, on the economic aspect and the euro, we are also a specific case. We unilaterally use the euro. So we don't have our own national currency. Since in the late 90s, the country introduced the German mark as a legal tender. So it was the only currency that could be used in Montenegro. That was during the years of 1998 and 1999, before the Kosovo campaign, when actually the Milosevic started printing money in order to fund the preparations for the future conflict in Kosovo. And that actually created a fear that we would again enter the inflation which we had in 1992, 1993, and which was terrible. It was the third highest inflation in the world ever in the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. So we switched to the German mark, and subsequently, when the German mark was replaced by the euro, we replaced it by the single currency. The kind of the influence it has had is twofold. One is that it has had a mostly positive impact. It has stabilized the finances, fiscal policy. Of course, now when we cannot print the money and we cannot influence the monetary policy, obviously our central bank buys the euros at the market, so we cannot print anything. It means that the country has to be more responsible. And for the last 12 years, actually, we have been living with a really hard currency. So it means that the budget has been it had to be in a good shape, in a sense. So obviously, some 3 years, 4 years ago, we had a crisis, economic crisis hit us, so we had the budget deficit. But that was also due to the fact that the biggest export commodity at that time was aluminium, and aluminium price dropped sharply. And also because the aluminium is traded in dollars, the dollars-euro situation at that time was very negative. So it created a GDP deficit. Now we have a much better economic terms. We had the 3.5 GDP growth last year. So 3.5. And of course, the good thing is that the euro has benefited the foreign direct investments and also touristic economy, because the tourists like to, of course, country with the euro which is stable, and of course the investors like to invest in a country which is, of course, we are not the eurozone, but we use the currency. What will happen is that we are going to negotiate chapter economic and monetary policy with a higher kind of control by the Commission, by DG ECFIN, and also the European Central Bank, on how we deal with the public debt, with the budget deficit, and also the overall fiscal policy, which means that we will be asked to align with the acquis on the banking union, for example. Although this is not required from non-Eurozone members, so Poland does not have to apply it.
Would you subscribe the fiscal compact?
I guess that we will be asked. The idea is, but this is still informal because the Commission has not come up with the full range. Now they invited us to join, or actually to implement the banking union package. But I would feel that the scenario will be that we join the European Union, we continue using the euro, and then we fulfill the Maastricht criteria. Of course, we cannot implement or we cannot fulfill the parity criteria because we don't have our own currency. But at that time, when we start fulfilling the Maastricht or whatever the conditions will be in 2020, we should be also getting to be ready for the also facility and all the other packages that come with the Eurozone membership.
So it would be
maybe
sorry.
Not ask because it's not a key still.
It's not a key, no. It'd only be a European key in 5 years after 2013, I think. It was. It became part of the legislation. So, it would be a way that would be make it easier for you to get to the level that is demanded for the European currency, and for the regulations and the obligations that you have as the members of the European Union in the near future, because it will become European law in 2000. I think it's 18. I think it is, because it's 5 years after it became law, and I think it was at 2013 that it became formally, it was not signed, but it ends, because it had signed first, and then the ratification process that took around a year. I think it's 2013, it was December 2013, it will be 5 years after. That it becomes the obligations of the budget of the public deficit of GDP, and it has all the kind of regulation that you have now.
And it's valid for the 27?
It's valid for the 25 that signed it. That's why it's not a European treaty, because there were two states that didn't sign it. It was United Kingdom and Czech Republic that didn't sign it.
I guess that...
I think Croatia signed it because he wants to have the single currency also. So it means, and this means, even though if it's an international treaty, in 5 years it will become European law.
The idea is, and thank you for mentioning this, that of course, at this stage we are not asked about the things that become valid in a certain period, but obviously we'll get invited to align with it sometime before actually it becomes enforced. I mean, the same way we are invited to, let's say, the Solvency II or Europe and the other ones. So, but the big problem with this economic and monetary policy is that since we are the kind of a case which is completely new, which is very specific, DG ECFIN has not been really, I would say, we haven't discussed it very much until they get a clearer picture how to proceed. Because there were lots of discussions whether we should be asked to abandon the euro and get our own currency, which would be very costly and very inefficient, because you could imagine at some point we should renounce the euro, get back to the old kingdom's currency from 19th century, and then again fulfill the Maastricht criteria for the eurozone. So it's... good. On the question on the difficult chapters, the obviously from our point of view, it's easy to understand. Maybe to say what would be difficult for you, it's this chapter, economic and monetary policy, because you has no, let's say, approach to how to negotiate the chapter 17. But of course, I mean, for the EU, Montenegro is not a big problem. We do not have political issues like some of the countries, so we do not get into the EU some of the disputed, areas which could create problems from the EU. And you have also to bear in mind that we started very early with the, aligning with the EU, even in those, let's say, free trade agreements and the contractual relations with the third countries, like the, also WTO, having in mind that at one point we'll join in the EU. So we're trying to really diminish the any negative effects. From our side, obviously, the there is a package of two packages of difficult or challenging chapters. One is the rule of law. As I told you, this is not the big issue, the rule of law, two chapters, 23, 24, justice and fundamental rights and justice, judiciary and fundamental rights and justice, liberty, security. And these two chapters are now the heart of the process. If things don't go well in justice and home affairs, then the whole of the process becomes becomes slowed down or even blocked. The and then you have a group of chapters which belong to the core of the EU internal market and the core of EU policies. Obviously, the most expensive and the most difficult will be environment. This is always the chapter which calls for really lots of structural change, but lots of involvement of the local government and lots of investment. Obviously, we're going to ask for transitional periods like most of the countries, because we won't be ready by 2020 with the sewage system or with the water management system or with some waste dumps. So this will be will call for more negotiations and more preparations. We estimate the costs of this chapter in hundreds of millions. Then there is the energy chapter, which is also costly because of the oil stocks. We'll have to adapt to the EU acquis and keep the oil stocks with this 90 days reserve. But also there are very demanding chapters like food safety. Food safety is an extremely hard acquis chapter. There is a lot of regulation. There is lots of standards going from the border crossings when you export food or import food to the food establishments to the actually change the way how people let's say deal with the production of eggs, the way how you keep your hands, whether it's the cage is big enough, which means huge costs because we'll have to replace almost all the cages. It means it sounds silly, but it's a very practical thing which costs. Then
agriculture.
Yes, but that's for the benefit of the hands. And then, of course, the agriculture chapter, which means that we'll have to actually adapt to the common agricultural and fisheries policies, both chapters. And I think that we are going to lose lots of to lose with the fisheries chapter because, in a way, at this moment we are using only 1% of the Adriatic of the resources, and fisheries is not a very developed industry back home. We don't have large ships and really big and big companies dealing with it. So by the time we join, there will be limits set up, and the Adriatic will be open mostly to the Italians at that time. So, and the Italians is a superpower compared to us when fishing. Of course, there is the competition chapter, state aid. You know the rules and how tough it is for the member states. In our case, it's the metal industry and the national air company. But we still have lots of years until we, okay, lots of years, a longer period until we join. So we'll see whether the aluminium industry will survive in the next several years, whether it can be competitive or not. Because in most of the metal industries in the region, it's totally dying out. In Serbia, in Bosnia, you have even the much better companies producing steel and aluminium, which are totally shut down. And also, it was a big part of the Russian investments in the region. Now they are withdrawing and moving out. So this will be the negative sides to some extent. One of the biggest problems is that we cannot use structural funds until we join. So pre-accession assistance is much smaller. It's 10 to 15 times smaller than what we would get once we join. On the Albania and Kosovo themselves, they're two different cases in the sense that Albania really managed to, when you compare us or Yugoslavia in 1990 and Albania, the starting point for the Albanians was really zero. They started from a very bad situation and they managed, I think they are record holders in how they transformed the country. Obviously, there is still more to be done. I presume they could get the candidate status this year, maybe at the council in June or sometime later. But then they will have to do really a lot in order to start negotiating, to fulfill the conditions for the opening of accession talks. Because Albania has invested a lot and they're working on many issues, but still, you know, there are lots of gaps to be fulfilled, filled in. And on the other hand, Kosovo has a different kind of story. Obviously, it passed through the conflict, it passed through the, it's still under, it's kind of protectorate under the, they'll have elections on the 8th of June, we'll see how it will go. And it would be interesting to see how Kosovo will develop, bearing in mind the European integration, which is their main goal now. We cooperate a lot with them. We try to share experience. We have cross-border programs with Kosovo and Albania, and we tried really to... We now signed the eight agreements with Kosovo to actually improve the cross-border, let's say, transport and trade and things like border security. Obviously, Kosovo cannot stay an empty hole in the region. We have to improve the cooperation and to actually try to find the ways how actually to stabilize the situation, since it's a neighboring country to us. They will have a long way until they reach the membership. We presume that it will take much more. They are, I would say, on a good way to change things and to improve the situation. At least there is some movement, unlike in Bosnia, which is completely in a standstill, or in Macedonia, which does not move. I mean, it's blocked in its integration. Kosovo hopefully shall soon sign the Stabilization Association Agreement, which would mean a lot. It would be a first step. And then hopefully the relationship between Belgrade and Pristina will improve. Now when Serbia is going undergoing the screening, but once they start working on chapters, there will be lots of open issues. I mean, what is the Serbian borderline? Or what is the statistical data for the population of Serbia? How many universities there are? Do they count the universities in Pristina and in Kosovo in their own universities? You understand? I mean, from the practical side, negotiating of Serbia will be very tough. It will not. I mean, I think that the EU is not going to repeat the mistake like with Cyprus in the sense of. I'm talking freely on this. It's what do you get into the EU? Which borders and which country? And as the last question on the. Elections, obviously we are following what's happening. The European Parliament is not involved directly with the enlargement until the last sequence when it approves of the accession treaty. But we have a constant cooperation with the European Parliament through the Stabilization Association Parliamentary Committee. Constantly meeting, and I think that these meetings have really improved the understanding and the feeling in our parliament to understand better how the EU functions. Of course, there is we are invited to COSAPs and also COSACs, and also we are a member of COSAP in the region, but the SAPCs have really improved the and also the approach of our parties to the European integration. That's why a year and a half ago we split the European Affairs Committee from the Foreign Affairs Committee and created this special one, because this European Integration Committee deals with all the issues, and I regularly go to the Parliament almost 3 to 4 times a month to discuss the different chapters, to present the reports, and to talk to the parliamentarians. So I think it's a good exercise to prepare. When it comes to the population, the support, we have been steadily having good support for the EU. It's two-thirds of the population, which really feels really positive. It's not like 90% in Macedonia, Kosovo, Albania, but I would say that in those countries, the accession is still very political. In Macedonia, they see the EU as something they cannot get. So that's why they support the idea of the EU. Also in Kosovo, they feel about that the EU is going to improve everything. So It's something like we used to be 5-10 years ago. And also you have to bear in mind that the most of the news coming from the EU in the media is negative. I mean, it's not our journalists that write, but they get the text from the British media, from the media that write about the crisis, about the Cyprus, about Greece, about the UKIP and let's say the National Front and this. And it's mostly these news. They don't write about the good sides of the European Union. So I think that it's very good score that we have, 75%, 70% of support. And most of the people, when you ask them what they fear is, they fear they will lose, or the Montenegrins will lose the social benefits in the EU, that the economy will lose its position, it will be drowned in the internal market, the huge market. And to some extent, the population feels the possibility of loss of national issues such as the language and things like that. Because we are small, so it's normal. You join a huge union. But so now we are trying to develop a public campaign when we talk to the people about the benefits, what we gain, and how it will improve the conditions and standards of living. I'm more concerned about the lack of support for the enlargement in the EU population, because EU-wide, according to Eurobarometer, it's only 35% of people who feel positive about the enlargement. Obviously, it's about, when you ask the European citizen about enlargement, they think about Turkey, not Montenegro. But, you know, it's kind of way where we also have to think about the all the political, or most of the political elites would say the enlargement has done only good things.
There's a lot of talk that the last big enlargement was flopped.
But the indicators show it was the good thing. It benefited both. And so.
Thank you very much. We wish you all the best for you and for your country. And we hope that the relations between our two countries improved even before your accession, of course, and after that also. Thank you very much.
Just for the end to say that I really feel that there should be, I feel you will meet our colleagues at the COSAC meetings and maybe at some events that are like the Union for the Mediterranean Parliamentary Assembly. It would be good really to see how to establish the contact. I will transmit this message to the head of the Parliament European Affairs Committee. For example, we were last year in Ireland for the presidency, and we talked a lot about establishing contact. And now we have the delegation. Mr. Hannigan is coming from Ireland to visit Montenegro for the first time and to speak. And prior to that, we never had any contact with the Irish, you know, because we are a new state and so on. So I would really feel that you should come to visit Montenegro to see for yourself how the country is progressing, and maybe to have a round in the region to see how the different the countries are, and to get a feeling of maybe the countries where the European Union is more alive than in some of the member states because of the integration.
Thank you. Due to the economical crisis, our committee didn't make the annual visit last year because we used to do a visit each year. We do a visit to some countries which are important for the European Union, but maybe we'll do it maybe this year or next year. And I think that we were thinking on Serbia. Maybe we can put together both countries, which is very easy to do. So, yeah. So maybe we can prepare this. Thank you very much for the idea. Thank you.